money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Ball, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to Dash Radio's Nothing But Net Station. You are listening to Locked On Wizards here, and I'm your host, Noah Getzel. It is Friday evening. Lots of good playoff matchups have been going on. Of course, the Wizards aren't quite there with them, but keep enjoying the playoffs. The Locked On Wizards show is, you know, a subsidiary of Locked On Wizards podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and we've got tons of awesome analysis of every postseason game. You know, whether you're following Locked On Warriors, Locked On Rockets, whoever it may be, Locked On Cavs, quality content all around. So today we are going to focus on Wizards coach Scott Brooks and recap his season two at the helm, an up and down year for sure. He described it as a roller coaster, actually. So we'll talk about the biggest criticisms and most positive traits of Scott Brooks. Of course, like his development of young talent is awesome. His ability to kind of empower his players to reach that next level is great. And then we'll talk about some of the qualms of the legacy that kind of has stuck with them since OKC, where there's, you know, just give it to the best player in crunch time and see what happens. So here to review Scott Brooks's year two, we bring in our guest for the night, Ian Evans, who has been on Locked On Wizards once before. He was with Arthur Renault, and that was a podcast talking about criticism of Bradley Beal back then after a victory over the Pistons. So Ian hails from Leesburg, Virginia. He got incredibly hyped about the Wizards once they brought back Michael Jordan. I guess Jordan decided to go to the team. It wasn't necessary. He was owning the team. He's just like, hey, I'm going to play, by the way. So Ian, it's awesome to have you here. And by the way, this is kind of some big news about the program. Ian is going to be one of the co-hosts. He's going to work with Arthur Renault from Wizards Extra, Locked On Wizards. Also, Becca Winkert, a.k.a. Becca MVP on Twitter. You probably know her and love all of her tweets. They are going to be taking over. I'm going to be taking a step back. So, Ian, how's it feel, man? You're going to be filling those big boy shoes. Not necessarily that I have big shoes to
big
fill, but you excited to step into the limelight?
Yeah, man. It's going to be exciting. You know, me, Arthur, and Becca talked a little bit few times already, but we're excited. We're just going to get together every week, and we're going to talk about our favorite team constantly disappoints us.
Yeah. So let's start with the positives. What would you say are some of the best qualities about Scott Brooks in terms of the way that he's led the Wizards for the past 2 years? Obviously, starting from number one, he's just a really nice guy. He's not like Randy Whitman. He's awesome to be around. You know, he's never throwing reporters or anything under the bus. It's just pleasant he sets a good tone. I haven't necessarily seen him too mad ever. I've seen him frustrated, but I would wonder what it's like to be in the locker room with him after the Wizards are, you know, dropping down like by 15 points to the Dallas Mavericks or something like that. I mean, there's got to be more positive traits, but like I'll let you start off. What do you like about Scott Brooks? What has he done well for the Wizards after his second year?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what you just mentioned. He seems like a player's coach. He's super likable. I think he does a really good job relating to his players, getting to know them on a personal level and making the players think that he cares about them, you know. And definitely different than Randy Whitman. Randy Whitman's like if the Grinch. Do you remember that movie with Jim Carrey?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like if he was on the sideline coaching a team.
But I think they have some similar philosophies in terms of like being stuck in a different generation of basketball, whereas like, you know, Scott Brooks kind of plays people to the brink. He'll play Bradley Beal 40 minutes over and over and over again. He'll play John Wall that many minutes, you know, 2 weeks after he comes back from injury and is finally playing like some 5-on-5 scrimmages. He plays young players more, which is, you know, a bit different than that. But what else does he do that's very old school? He loves playing centers, centers who are immobile. And, you know, you got to deal with the hand that you're dealt. And in the playoffs, he had Mike Scott playing some stretch five, so he mixed it up a little bit. But, you know, he just loves starting the game and starting overtime sessions with Martin Gortat on the floor. But let's not jump back and forth. Some other positives that you have enjoyed, obviously leading a team to 49 wins after that was the first time they got there since, like, when was it, the 70s or 80s? That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, I think his main strength is really developing young players. So having young, talented guys where in the past, whoever the head coach would be, whether it was Eddie Jordan, you know, Randy Whitman, developing young guys and making sure that they improve. I think what you've seen from Kelly Oubre, and I know he had a rough end to the year, but the leaps and bounds you've seen from him, I think what you've seen from Bradley Beal from where he used to be, and then even John Wall. John Wall's gotten better since Scott Brooks has been the coach of this team. So being able to take young guys and develop them, probably the thing he's best at, even when you look back to his days at Oklahoma City, taking Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, James Harden, and you can make the same argument that you can make with the Wizards. Well, of course those guys panned out because they're just super talented. But I just don't think that's the case. I think a lot of the time it really comes down to what are you teaching these guys in practice? What are you doing with them in the middle of the game? What are you saying to them? And he's certainly got his shortcomings, but if he's good at anything, it's taking young talent and molding them into very good players.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Like, Tomas Satoransky would have never had the year that he had after Wall went down if it was Randy Whitman or someone else who just didn't necessarily trust his game and might have stuck with a more traditional point guard. Obviously, like, Tim Frazier didn't do very much for the team, but I think that's a good point. Were you surprised at all, given his reputation of developing young talent? Do you feel like you maybe would have wanted to see Chris McCullough or Devin Robinson play some more minutes that weren't garbage time over the course of the year?
Yeah, definitely. So specifically with Devin Robinson, I remember he hit the court and I was like, and it was maybe 3 minutes into him being on the court, and he was playing really well. Defensively, he looked outstanding. And then on offense, he was just hustling. He was getting offensive rebounds for second chances. And I remember thinking, like, who's this guy? Mm-hmm. Like, is he been on the team all year? Why haven't we been playing him? So that was kind of shocking, given Brooks's his ability to take young talent and make them better. And Chris McCullough, do we know, how is Chris McCullough, like, 22 years old?
He was born in 95. I was born in 91, so he's probably, like, 23-ish. I know he's older than Kelly Oubre, who's 21.
Okay.
So he's probably 22 or 3.
Yeah, you have a guy who's very long, he's super athletic, and his stroke is pretty good. When he lets a jumper go, it looks good. You can tell he could have the ability to shoot. And I'm surprised that, especially when in a year where Martin Gortat just had a huge decline, and it's not a slight against March. It's age. It happens to every player literally that has ever played in the NBA. But he's just not what he used to be. And meanwhile, we've got this young, gifted center on the bench, and he gets no playing time. And he's a guy that can run, too. He can get up and down the court.
Yeah, he's super athletic.
Yeah, so it was a little surprising. I think that hopefully next year those guys are still on the roster and they get some time. But I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm. You never know with Scott Brooks. So.
Along a similar vein, one thing that kind of irked me a little bit last year, it's tough to complain too much when you win 49 games, but one guy who I thought should have gotten some more minutes was Sheldon Mack. And that's because, like, I know this year defense was a big issue for the Wizards, maybe not quite as much last season, but he just seemed like a guy, when he was inserted, he just played so hard. You know, his defensive tenacity looked good. He developed, he was a decent shooter. He could handle the ball pretty well for someone with very little NBA experience. And I was just a little bit surprised that, you know, he barely played at all, given what seemed like a lot of potential from Sheldon Mack. Of course, he's no longer with the Wizards. He was traded to free up some cap space to make some of those Ramon Session type signings because he suffered that Achilles injury. And I wish all the best to Sheldon Mack coming back. It's obviously a tough injury to recover from. But were you kind of disappointed at all that last season Sheldon Mack played such a small role, or were you cool with, you know, his role for the team?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed, especially last year. The bench was really bad last year.
Right.
For the Washington
Marcus
Wizards.
Thornton was the backup shooting guard until it became Bojan Bogdanović at the end.
Yeah, it was so bad. So bad.
I just loved Mack's tenacity. Like, you saw these highlights of him and Wall playing one-on-one practice, and he'd, you know, shut him down and be able to get by him. And who knows how much Wall was actually trying, but it's just good to see a guy who doesn't back down.
Yeah, Sheldon Mack was he's a smooth athlete. He's great around the rim. His touch, just putting English on the ball, the way he would spin it off the glass, and then his mid-range game, he looked very promising. It's a bummer about the Achilles injury, but I think he'll be okay. He'll recover. I think he'll find a spot on a team somewhere off the bench because he's a good – anyone in the NBA who can score and who looks as comfortable as he did in such limited minutes, there's value there. So, yeah, I was shocked that he didn't play.
Mm-hmm. So any final thoughts on – the positives about Scott Brooks before we take a quick transition over to, you know, some of the areas of improvement?
I think that when Oklahoma City moved on from him, we heard a lot about the lack of creativity.
Are you still on positives right now?
Yeah, I'm still on positives. But I think when the Washington Wizards brought him in for the interview and then ultimately to hire him, I remember he had mentioned, you know, he took a deep dive in the time that he had taken off. He took a deep dive into analytics. He had been at the Sloan Conference multiple times, and he had talked to a lot of kind of just these brilliant people who could take these numbers and translate what they meant for on the court, for players, and for coaches. And specifically, he looked at these numbers and was like, wow, this is very powerful, right? This will give me a lot of data, and I can use this to my advantage. And I think it's the thing that I liked about bringing in Scott Brooks was that he seemed like he had evolved with the game, or at least he wasn't stagnant. Because a lot of the time, these types of hires really blow up in your face and backfire, where you have these coaches who maybe coach an antiquated brand of basketball, and the rest of the league is light years ahead. And I still think Scott Brooks is ready to play the brand of basketball that the Wizards need to be successful in 2018, 2019, et cetera. So I do think that's also a pro of him, is that, you know, whereas Randy Whitman was like, no, we're just going to throw it in the paint and we're going to punch people in the face.
Shoot some long twos. They're closer, man.
Yeah. Yeah. 15-foot shots are better than 30. But,
no, but you hear after game, like, you know, Bradley Beal shot 10 threes tonight. I love that. I want to see more of it. You know, he hits 40% of them. Like, he's got to keep shooting. He needs to do this every game. We'd score more points. You know,
yeah,
so he's got the right approach.
You see recently, too, him mentioned on the exit interview, we need to shoot more threes.
For sure. You know? The Wizards were, I think, the bottom five or something. And they shot them really well. They hit a high clip. But, yeah, in terms of, you know, some teams shoot a ridiculous number. Like, we're not going to ever be the Warriors or the Rockets with only Bradley Beal and Otto Porter being consistent shooters. I guess, you know, this past year we had Mike Scott and Tomas Satoransky. Oubre was shooting well for a little bit, but we need to change the personnel a bit more before we, you know, can be shooting that many threes, I would say. So now, again, thanks for listening to Locked On Wizards here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net Station. Be sure to check out Locked On Wizards on Twitter. And also NBN dash radio is the handle at NBN dash radio is for Nothing But Net to check out all the shows on the station. We are going to go into the darker mode for just a second, and we're going to talk a little bit about the critiques of Scott Brooks and where he can improve for the Wizards next season. I'm like 99.9% sure that he's going to come back with the team just because he's owed $35 million contract. He's still got 21 on the table. Yeah, Ted is not about to waste all that. So let's dive right into that.
Chance.
They're kind of things that sneak up on you over the course of the year. I feel like for me, at least, the biggest thing is just, you know, lack of late game execution in the fourth quarters. And then the rotations can be a little bit sketchy at times, too. And just the fact that he loves playing centers, and they're only, you know, centers who are older and more immobile and not quite rim protectors on the roster, but, you know, they're making tons of money, so we may as well play him and see what they got. But at the same time, you know, the whole NBA is moving away from it. You'd think that the Wizards might play. Gortat didn't play a ton of minutes, but I don't know. I just feel like it's strange that he's still starting at this stage, even though he contributes a lot to the team. Do you feel like it's kind of the same critiques or your major critiques? Is there anything I'm missing about how Scott Brooks can improve?
No, we're on the same page. I think, yeah, you bring up the center argument. I just think it's really weird that you have a guy who obviously knows the team is better when Gortat's not on the floor, because you would see entire second halves where Martin Gortat would just be benched. So it's tough sometimes throughout the regular season as a fan, especially, to understand what the logic is behind that. Like, let me start the game with this guy who I know is not optimizing my team.
But I mean, he's always starting the second half though. So, and like, there is some argument that like that lineup with Kelly Oubre, who was it? It's Wall, Beal, Oubre, Porter, and then Gortat is one of like the most efficient lineups, and you need Gortat for a few reasons. Even if he's not getting the rebounds, he boxes out incredibly well and prevents people from getting rebounds. He sets tremendous screens. I think he was ranked way up there in screen assists. He steps in for some charges. He rolls off of pick and rolls better than any other center on the roster, you know, any big man. He's just the best at the screen and roll game. So there are things that Gortat brings to the table. Did he do those better maybe 3 years ago when the Wizards first signed him? Absolutely. But like, I don't think the role that Gortat played over the course of the season, like, given the personnel,
yeah,
like, it's not like I'm furious, you know. It's not like he was playing 36 minutes a game or anything like that.
I mean a lot of this isn't on Scott Brooks too. I mean,
right.
the faults are still absolutely there. He's just not very creative after timeouts. That's something that's been with him almost his entire career at this point. He probably plays his star players entirely too many minutes. I don't think he's like a Tom Thibodeau, but he's right there. When you see Bradley Beal being beaten down by the end of the season, just looks exhausted. But I think a lot of this is kind of being handcuffed to your roster. And your roster was great a few seasons ago, and now it's kind of out of date. And I think Martin Gortat's a huge part of that. He is still, to this day, one of the best screen setters in the entire NBA. But I kind of heard the argument made this year by a couple of friends of mine when we were at a game, especially when you have John Wall as your point guard and the guy kind of setting the table and facilitating. You don't need someone like Gortat who screens as well as he does if instead you replace him with someone who spaces the floor out and in turn gives John Wall way more space to work with, you know, because John Wall doesn't need a screen to get by the defender in front of him. He needs space. And in Gortat's, you know, when it comes to March coming up and setting screens, it does give John Wall some space. But if you had, you know, there was rumors going around that Mike Scott was going to be the starting five at some point in the Toronto series. But let's just say that Mike Scott is your five and Keith is your four.
Mike Scott is 6'7", by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's why I thought it was kind of weird that wasn't switched, but let's just roll with it since that was kind of the rumor floating around. But let's say you've got a smaller guy who is a lights out shooter at that position and he's now at the 3-point line. John Wall doesn't need a screen to get around his defender. He can just go to the basket.
But who's going to get rebounds if you've got a guy, you know, chilling at the 3-point line, you know? Course, Scott is a physical player. You see him when he's posting off offensively. He just, you know, goes to lunch on some of the smaller guys on him. But yeah, if you're playing center and you're trying to get a rebound and you're 6'7" and the guy next to you is 6'11", like, you can't really body him the same way and take advantage of that sort of mismatch.
Yeah, Mike Scott's got, like, Jonas Valanciunas just tapping the ball away repeatedly. Like, but, yeah, that's the huge problem, right? The roster is kind of handcuffed. You can't really do that. That's the thing. There's a lack of creativity in the play calling late game for sure, because you know, just throwing the ball to your best players and praying that something happens, probably not the best bet, especially late in the game when things are starting to tighten up defensively.
Mm-hmm. That's my number one critique for sure.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, we'll get more into that in a second. But to wrap up, I guess the roster issue, it's tough when you want to do a certain style of play. You want to do small ball. But for the reasons you mentioned, you kind of can't right now because this team is just not built for it. And I think if you had someone who could be that, I don't know if it's the four or the five or both, but guys who could shoot from the perimeter but also be a rim protector, because the huge problem with running out a small lineup right now is rim protection and rebounding. And right now, you're pretty much asking John Wall to be your rim protector right. In any small lineup, which is kind of laughable. It's kind of hilarious.
And what worked really well, which we saw a little bit this year too, was putting Markieff Morris into the reserve unit last year and kind of having him be like the fulcrum that can go get you a bucket. And, you know, he moved the ball pretty well. And we saw that some with Mike Scott, but it seemed like Porter was more so the guy running with the second unit, and he is more of like the shy, like, I'll get my shot if it's passed to me and I can't necessarily like make a move and be the playmaker. So I don't know how well Oubre fit into that role. And of course he wants an expanded role. He'd love to be a starter and has the talent to do it. But he only plays well in my mind when he's surrounded by the rest of the starting lineup to a certain extent. So maybe, you know, there were good additions putting him in where he played with John Wall and Beal and, you know, produced quality minutes. But I've got a question about the playoffs for you, Ian. Do you feel like Tomas Satoransky kind of got snubbed a little bit? Was he just, you know, not able to cut it in his minutes where he was in? Or do you feel like he got shortchanged where Ty Lawson ate up too many of his minutes?
I think I don't know how you couldn't say he got shortchanged. I think you have a guy in Satoransky who proved himself the entire season. Super high basketball IQ, and when he's got the ball in his hands, just really good at making the right reads, and then when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, making sure he's moving off the ball. And I understand Scott Brooks' logic. He's like, okay, let me get a quicker guy, because Satoransky's not super explosive when it comes to his lateral movement and ability to like just smoke guys on the perimeter, but he
makes up for it a little bit with his length in terms of altering and blocking shots and getting more rebounds than, you know, a guy like Lawson or Tim Frazier.
Yeah. But offensively, I think Scott Brooks was thinking, I've got this guy who is great and he's hyperactive, even when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, setting screens, getting the right spot. And then I've got Ty Lawson, who is still maybe one of the best ball handlers on planet Earth. You know, the guy can – it was hilarious to watch him land off – you know, come off of the plane from China and just clown some of the Raptors players on the perimeter and make them look kind of silly. But I think when you take Tomas Satoransky and you move him away from the point guard position, it diminishes his entire skill set, and it kind of zeroes him out. And I think even though you got some really good minutes from Ty Lawson in the playoffs – overall, taking Tomas Satoransky essentially out of the equation in a way by not letting him be the guy bringing the ball up the court and setting the table hurt the team more than Ty Lawson's good play helped them, if that makes any sense.
It does. When you have no shooting guard besides Bradley Beal, like, what do you do? Do you try and play Oubre at shooting guard? And it comes down to roster construction, so not necessarily coaching, but... You know, like, we all know, even though Satoransky can play off the ball and he compliments John Wall fine, if John trusts him a little bit more shooting, you know, shooting threes, but everybody knows that he's best as a playmaker, and that's where he didn't play in the playoffs, so of course he's not going to perform as well when he doesn't have the ball in his hands and he's not playing point guard.
Yeah, man, that's another huge problem with the team. I mean, to your point, the team is literally, it's like John Wall, Bradley Beal, and then like 8 point guards and 4 centers.
And Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre, and that's it. Yeah.
I'm really glad that secret contract extension happened.
I've got a few questions A bit unrelated to the Wizards to kind of close this thing out. So I just want everyone, all of our listeners, to have a better sense of who you are, Ian. So I've got some crazy questions to throw at you. If you were stuck on a desert island with anyone on the Wizards, who would you want to be paired with?
Honestly, probably Kelly Oubre. Probably Kelly Jr., yeah.
To see what outfits he comes up with when he has no wardrobe and he's just in the middle of an island.
Yeah, he'd be, like, in the forest, and he'd be like, dude, we can use these leaves as, like, felt scarves.
Yeah.
I learned this from H&M.
I don't know. He'd probably be on all sorts of, like, magazine covers after his experimentation out there. What about, like, a pair of players, if it's not just one? You're, like, the fly on the wall with two guys who are, like, you know, the odd couple or, you know, best friends, whatever you want to pick, and they're stuck in this island together. Who are you picking? Who do you want to observe?
I think John and Keith. John Wall and Markieff Morris could be pretty fun together.
They're definitely the best quotes on the team, I would say. You know, like their post-game interviews, there's a lot more real talk than what you hear from some of the other guys, and they keep it entertaining.
Who do you know? Yeah, sure. I think Keith's big balls would be super useful on the island that we're stuck on.
That was hilarious. Which wizard do you most want to go clubbing with?
Oh, God. Probably. I mean, my first instinct is John, because we know that's kind of what he does. You know, in his free time, he likes to go out and have some fun. I think I would do it with Otto. He just seems so smooth. I remember those Instagram photos of him on a boat. It's like him on a boat with like four women in bikinis. Nice.
My old roommate, I doubt he's listening, but he once saw Otto at the club, The Living Room, and I don't know how much of interaction they had. I don't think he was with anyone else on the Wizards at the time, but, you know, he goes out and does his thing in the DC nightclubs, I guess, so
yeah.
not a bad choice. And he's probably got some sick cars that you could roll in, too.
Yeah, he probably fixed up some really cool 98 Honda Civics.
Good. What's your favorite tradition at Wizards games, like during timeouts? I'd say mine is the kiss cam or the baby race. Those are pretty cool. I like Simon Says at halftime too. What's your favorite?
It's the terrible song they play after the Wizards win. It's like, go Wizards, go Wizards, go Wizards. Yeah, I have to go. That's been around forever. They haven't let it die yet.
Yeah. When you look at yourself on a basketball court and you compare your game to someone on the Wizards or anybody in the NBA, did you come from like a basketball background? Is there someone whose game you model it after?
Yeah, I played my whole life pretty much. Steve Nash, I guess I would say.
Oh, all right. How tall are you, Ian?
I am 5'9".
Okay. Yeah, that's legit.
I've always enjoyed passing the basketball in fun ways a lot more than trying to score. So.
All right. I feel that. I think we're running out of time here. Any final thoughts about Scott Brooks before we wrap things up?
I think he's still a very good coach in the NBA. I think it's a combination right now. When you saw how the Wizards struggled this year at times, a lot of it was due to him and his faults and his shortcomings. But a lot of it was also due to the roster. When you have a huge number of just, if we're being honest, absolutely useless guys on the roster that you can't even put on the court. And one of those, you know, you're putting people like Jody Meeks are playing meaningful minutes. It's going to really destroy what you're trying to do on the court at times. And I think he needs the right personnel and the right kind of roster. And he also needs his team to be healthy. He's a guy who had a roster where, quite frankly, I think Bradley Beal might not have been ready to take on the ball handling load and the decision making load he did, but he still got this team and he kind of wringed whatever he could out of it when there wasn't much there. I think he's missing a few pieces, and I'm really looking forward to not getting those pieces in the offseason because we're not structured in the way where we can.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some money to throw around or just, you know, have someone who travels into the future and sees who's going to be Rookie of the Year and make some way to figure out how to pick that guy up. All right, Ian, it's been a pleasure. We are looking forward to you being on a lot more of these Locked On Wizards shows and episodes on Dash Radio along with the podcast. Again, you can check out Dash Radio's Nothing But Net station. This is the Locked On Wizards show. It's every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. Ian Evans is the man taking over as one of the co-hosts. We also got Becca MVP, Becca Winkert, who will be a co-host. And then from Wizards Extra, we started in 2014 together, and that is Arthur Renault, or the District Mamba, as you can find him on Twitter. This is it for me. I'm still going to stick around a little bit, but you'll be seeing a lot more of Arthur, Becca, and of course Ian. So Ian, thanks so much. I appreciate you doing your first podcast with me, actually. So thanks for all the insights, and we'll be hearing from you a lot more soon.